Hi, it's Dave. And when we founded Galactic Netcasts back in 2011, we did it not to make money or become the most popular podcast network on the planet. We did it first to get together with friends to share our love of all things geeky like aliens and sci-fi. Of course, we've since broadened that out to include things like comic books, the paranormal, video games, board games, horror, science, and other topics. And over the years, we've never really asked you to do more than subscribe and maybe share our stuff with friends of yours who may like it too. And we've hardly ever came out and asked you directly for any kind of financial support until now. And we're not asking you to make a huge commitment or even something like Netflix, which is like $8 a month. But if you like what we do, please consider pledging at least $1 a month to help us cover operational costs like web and audio hosting. And maybe sometime in the future, we'll have enough in the budget for some advertising. Who knows? Bunch of people giving $1 a month can add up pretty quickly. For us, just you listening is good enough. But if you want to do more, go to patreon.com/galacticnetcasts. Again, that's Patreon, patreon.com/galacticnetcasts. Check out our rewards, and you might decide to commit to more than $1 a month. Either way, we thank you. And now, without further ado, here's your podcast. And of course, as always, a production of Galactic Netcasts.
Hello and welcome to the Podcast of Terror, a production of Galactic Netcasts. This is a show where we talk about whatever the hell I decide we want to talk about as long as it is in the genre of horror. Today I am joined by Corey, as always, looking silver and beautiful. Corey, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. It's nice to be aging at such a lovely pace that I'm going to get my winter coat soon. I expect that most of my hair will be see-through.
Speaking of winter coats, we have a special guest today, a very good friend of mine. I wouldn't call him a singer. He makes a lot of noises in a fashion that's not singing for a technical death metal band called Abiotic, Travis Bartosik. Travis, how are you doing, you beautiful son of a bitch?
Doing great. I'm very, very happy that you even pronounced my name correctly. Like, most people actually don't ever do that.
We talked about this the last time you toured through Wisconsin, the proper pronunciation of your last name. You also sent me a entirely nude photo of you cut off at the crank, although I can see the top of the shaft.
That was good. That was a good photo.
It's your contact picture on my phone. Every time you send me a text message, I see the top of your crank.
A lot of people realize that the top of the shaft is actually the best part.
Go on.
It's most important. It's doing all the work.
Oh, God.
Exactly. Like the first two floors in a skyscraper.
Oh, my God. We're doing this right now?
As a matter of fact, there is. I heard something about how skyscrapers of a certain height have to have a giant ball in the main floor area to kind of keep it from swiveling too far due to high-pressure winds. and I'm going to assume that Travis has a couple of big balls just for
high-pressure winds
integrity.
Wow.
Because of all the blowing.
That went south pretty quick.
To be fair, I've got one testicle that works. The other one is just kind of there. It's fake.
We're going to be ball bros, aren't we?
Yes. I was born with one of my balls in my stomach. So.
Were you born with a hernia too?
Yep.
Me too!
Oh my God, we're brothers in that sense.
I know, ball besties! God, next time I see you, we're going to party like uniballs do.
My balls just crawl up my stomach whenever I see people with cranks.
All right. I guess before we get completely derailed with dick talk, we should probably discuss what we came here to do. Before we get into it, Corey, do you want to do all the stuff that the white man makes us do?
The whitest man alive. Dave Nelson, leader of the Galactic Collective over at Galactic Netcast at gncast.com. He runs our network, and our network includes a bunch of great shows, including this week, a very special episode of Sci-Fi Geeks Club. And I don't mean special episode like Blossom, where she got touched by a weird uncle, but I mean an episode where we had...
motherfucking Andy Weir.
Andy Weir. Badass Andy Weir, awesome dude Andy Weir, and writer of The Martian, both the book and now the new movie that is getting rave reviews from everybody.
Everyone
that I've
and
seen.
Their mother has read this book. People come up to me at work, like, "Yeah, you should read The Martian." And I'm like, "Yeah, I met the guy who wrote the book."
Now twice.
Yeah, now twice, and he's a super nice guy too.
He's
surprisingly
really, really cool. So, great episode to go check out. We've also got some other shows like Adventure Party, Alien Invasion Podcast, Weird World Weekly, and so on. So, give us a look. You can also email us at galacticnetcast@gmail.com. Give us some feedback, and you can check out our mega feed or our singular feeds on iTunes or Stitcher.
Yeah, it covers it. You're so fucking good. You're so fast. Tell your wife I'm sorry.
Yeah. Just so fast. So fast.
This week we decided, after much deliberation, to compare Nightmare on Elm Street 1, the original, and the original Hellraiser. And I was glad that we could get Travis in on this, because you're in between tours right now, buddy, right?
Yep. Oh, yeah. I'm stuck in Florida for the whole month of October.
For, like, the six people that have heard of any of the bands that you've been on tour with, do you want to go ahead and give a quick rundown of what you do with your life?
Well, I play in a band called Abiotic, and I do vocals. I travel the country, and I sometimes go to Canada and Mexico, and then eventually I'll go to Europe. And I get in a van with a bunch of sweaty boys, and I go to show, and then sometimes, you know, I meet wonderful people, and I get to eat exquisite food from time to time. I don't make any money, and I spend a lot of time away from home, and I don't sleep much. It's, man, just
the American
the best
dream
thing ever.
Yeah, right. Stay in school, kids. Do not play in a metal band.
God, do not ever play in a metal band. Holy shit.
Yeah, that's why I went back to school and got 2 degrees, and now I buy Travis exquisite foods when he comes to town, and my wife makes some cookies.
I had cheese curds for the first time, and holy shit.
I had to go to the grocery store yesterday to get butter, and ended up getting butter, a pint of ice cream, and a bag of cheese curds, and the lady just stared at me, and I'm like, it's fucking Wisconsin.
Call a Dean, follow you out of the place?
Yeah, and then they sent in an ambulance shortly thereafter. Like, this fat motherfucker is going to have a heart attack soon.
She was judging you so hard.
Yeah, well, I'm not the one working at a grocery store at 8 a.m. on a Saturday, so suck it.
Ooh, fucking get him. Oh, God. If I had my air horn right now, I would just be like, bam, 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 bam.
You know what? I'll make a note and put the air horn sounds in after the fact. I'm actually gonna.
Oh, you need to.
Yeah. Air horn sounds. I gotta figure out what time this is at. This is gonna happen. Six.
It fucking better happen.
I apologize to our audio listeners who are checking this out through headphones.
Yeah, right. Well, this is your warning, because I'll put the air horn sounds after the disclaimer of take your fucking headphones out, because it's gonna go down.
Oh, it's gonna be loud as shit.
That's gonna be amazing. So, movies. I love Nightmare on Elm Street. All of them. Even the bad ones.
That's because they're all good.
I wouldn't say that they're all good. Did you end up getting to watch them all, or have you watched them all prior?
I got to watch and then I got to watch Wes Craven's New Nightmare.
Okay.
And then, pretty much, like, the way it worked out was, I think Freddy Krueger is the most maniacal fucking killer ever.
Yeah, like, because he came out at a time where,
he doesn't...
Go ahead.
He doesn't just, like, kill you. He's just like, here, I'm gonna fuck with you first.
It's a cat and mouse thing. I mean, it's really, like, he's mentally torturing the kids that he's going after, while it's not just, like, I come up and I murder you. Because that's the thing of a stalker film, like a Halloween or a Friday the 13th, it's that they don't usually see these guys coming. But everything that happens with Krueger is all mental. I mean, it's happening on the dreamscape, so it's affecting you in what is mostly your most vulnerable place, and it's meant to torture you at the same time that he's going to finally finish you off. It's almost like that's relief at that point.
And he came out at a time when, like, the slasher was huge. It was like you just got stalked and murdered.
Exactly. But nobody was a slasher like him. You got to look at it this way, because you had, what? So you had, you know, your Poltergeist films, you had The Omen, you had Friday the 13th, which had come out, I believe, prior.
That was like and then, three, I think.
And so you had, you know, you had Jason, who was just like, here, I'm just going to avenge my mother, and I'm just going to, like, kill everybody. And then you've got Freddy, who's just like, oh, your parents all made fun of me, and, you know, I burned to death, and now I'm going to fuck with your children. It's not even just going to, like, fuck with your children. I'm going to, like, psychologically break them down, then kill them.
Yeah, I mean, Freddy became a child murderer character. He was originally supposed to be a child molestation character, but there were some stories going around in the news at the time that they were filming in California, and they decided to take that aspect out, and it only got put back in the remake. And I don't think it was necessary to what the character was, but it's certainly not a far distance between the two, honestly.
No, but he has kind of a, I'm trying to think of the word, I mean, he has like a creepy guy down the street vibe to him.
Yeah.
So the murdering or the molestation kind of works on multiple levels, but it all helps in making Freddy who Freddy is. And even in the later movies, like 3 and 4, when he the killings become more personal. You know, like the girl who wants to be on TV, and she falls asleep, and he picks her up, and my favorite Freddy quote of all time is, "Welcome to primetime, bitch," and he jams her head in the TV.
Yeah.
You know, and then the chick with the eating disorder, and he turns her into a big fucking cockroach and stuff. Like, that's the shit that makes Freddy more terrifying than, you know, Jason or Michael Myers. It's personalized. It's like a greeting card for your death. And
trying to picture Hallmark doing that now. maybe a shoebox greeting.
Yeah, you know.
And the first Freddy is more horrific than the later Freddy films. He gets to be more comedic in what he's doing. It's still gross and torturous, but it was certainly darker in the original film than it was all the way up until the very last movie, which was The New Nightmare. And that's probably because of Craven himself. Wes Craven directed the first one and then stepped away because he did not want to do a franchise. He was not trying to create the next Friday the 13th series or Halloween series. He wanted this to be a one and done. And then when New Line decided that they were going to run with it because it was hugely successful,
yeah,
and it was basically their first venture, he's like, well, I'm out.
I actually did not know that. That's the more you know.
Yeah, right. Well, he did. Wes Craven did do New Nightmare. He didn't do any of them in the middle, did he? Obviously,
no.
Two, because two is a fucking train wreck. I rewatched it when we originally discussed that we were going to talk about the entire series, which I'm kind of glad we didn't because that's a lot of movie.
God.
Well, I want us to continue down this road. My hope is that we still do the rest of the Nightmare on Elm Streets versus the Hellraisers, maybe not in a row, but I like the fact that they both have the same number of films and we can kind of follow along, even though the Hellraisers get the advantage of coming out a little bit later, so they get to be influenced by the Nightmare films.
Yeah,
to a certain
but
degree.
I've seen all of the Hellraisers, maybe with the exception of one of the last. I watched the newest one yesterday, and we were discussing before we started recording, I think before Travis got here, that the ninth Hellraiser was released simply so that they wouldn't lose the rights, and it was recorded in like 2 weeks on a $300,000 budget with not the original Pinhead, and it was a shit story, and it is fucking garbage, and it stole so many things from the first movie that it was really, I think I fell asleep twice. And I don't feel like I missed any of the story by falling asleep.
Yes, but the good news is that movie would fall in the line, I think, right up next to the remake of A Nightmare on Elm Street. I think that's where it numbers.
But I don't... Yeah, that's true, but I don't hate the reboot of Nightmare on Elm Street.
No, but I find it very dull. Because I think that the original was so well done that I don't think the reboot was necessary or added anything to it. It more took away from it.
Yeah, I completely agree. I do think that, what's his name?
Jackie Earle Haley.
Oh, yeah, Jackie Earle Haley. I thought he did a good job of playing Freddy Krueger.
Yeah, he was actually supposed to be, well, he tried out for the original film, I think in the Johnny Depp part, and Johnny Depp went with him and wound up getting the part instead.
Which is a good tie-in. A lot of people don't realize that this was Johnny Depp's first movie, right?
Yeah,
it was
his first film credit. He gets the special introduction credit in introducing Johnny Depp.
Yep.
And he was basically hired because Wes Craven's daughters saw his picture saw his headshot and said that they wanted him to be the person chosen. And so that's why Depp basically got the part. Comparatively, Ashley Lawrence, who we'll talk about in Hellraiser, was the first appearance in that movie. So seems to work out better for Johnny Depp than it did for Ashley Lawrence.
Yeah, because I don't know who the hell she is.
Yeah, and look at Johnny Depp, one of the biggest, who did get better with age, I will admit.
Yeah, weird with age, though.
But you got to remember what roles he also took in.
That's true. He probably took in a penis or two as well.
Hey, you know what? I would, too, if I was him.
I would, too, if I were him.
I would, too, from him.
Thank you.
All valid statements. I do not disagree with any of that. And he's only like 5 feet tall. He's a little guy. Wears a size 28 pants. I'm pretty sure I could crack him in half.
Jesus.
Yeah. Public Enemies was filmed partially in Wisconsin because John Dillinger's from here. So there was a lot of people who went down and saw it, and they saw like his pants, and someone's like, "Oh, they're size 28." And I'm like, "I think my dick is a size 28."
Jesus.
No, it's really not. It's pretty disappointing.
I was just saying, my dick is a size 28 in ant size.
It's 28 ants around. No one else really came out of these movies.
Robert Englund became famous for this movie. He had been in the sci-fi series V going into this, and this actually, the filming took place in between the breaks for the V seasons, so that's part of why he was able to do the film. Heather Langenkamp, I remember watching on a spin-off show from the Severs show, where it was called Just the Ten of Us, about a coach and his wife and their 8 kids. She was one of the 4 babe sisters. They actually make a Freddy Krueger reference in the first episode. Everybody else was kind of like, they were there and they were gone. Amanda Weiss was in Better Off Dead and a couple of the things here and there, but they were very 80s actors who just sort of came and went.
I don't think anyone realized what A Nightmare on Elm Street was going to become. You know what I mean?
Oh, God, no. I mean, then you had the Freddy versus Jason, which I was a very large fan of.
Same
due
here.
To the fact that those two serial killers were infamous.
Have you seen all the Friday the 13th movies, Travis?
Yes. Okay. I think the only one I don't think I saw was the one that came out in 91. It was like 90 or 91.
I gotta look. I don't even know which one came out in 91. Oh, the original Friday the 13th came out in 1980. We were talking about that before. Part 3 came out in 82. Final Chapter, 84. God damn you, IMDb. It wasn't Jason Goes to Hell, was it?
No, it was...
Because that one was mid-90s?
Freddy's Dead, the Final Nightmare.
Oh, no, we're talking about Friday the 13th.
Oh, Friday the 13th. I've seen all the Friday the 13th movies.
Speaking of Freddy's Dead, it's actually really good. I like that movie a lot. That's the one with the 3D portion.
Yes, and with Roseanne Barr and Tom Arnold have a cameo in it.
Oh, I forgot about that.
It gets a little weird by that one. They were just like going all camped out. They do broach some of the stuff with Freddy's history in that one. And I think Alice Cooper has a cameo.
You're right. Where I was going with the whole Jason Goes to Hell is how it tied into Freddy versus Jason, where at the end, you know, Jason's mask is sitting down and Freddy kind of pulls it into the sand. That was a huge foreshadowing for a movie that people never thought would ever exist.
Yeah.
And I completely forgot where I was going with that, but that's a tits movie.
Well, let's segue for a second. Let's segue because there was at one point a rumor, and I think it was actually supposed to be happening, was that at the end of Freddy versus Jason, they were supposed to both get dragged down to hell by Pinhead.
See, and I had never heard that one, but I recall that they wanted a Michael Myers one, and at one point they wanted Ash, which might be happening now.
Yeah.
That's a TV show, though, right?
Well, they're doing an Army of Darkness series that should be coming out this month on Stars, but they're still trying to push to get Ash more involved.
I always liked Bruce Campbell, too.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to have someone who's got enough chutzpah and charm to go up against Freddy Krueger, it would be Ash.
Yeah, absolutely, because they're both very witty people.
I can see it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, their characters would play well on each other. The bantering and the gusto, I guess I could say. I don't know. That's an old man word. I've had it, Travis. You called me an old man twice already today.
Yeah, you are an old man.
Stop. I was like checking to see that the newest Friday the 13th comes out May 13th. Friday the 13th, May 2016. It's actually pretty fucking tits.
Wow. Really? There's a new Friday? Oh, my lord. All right, Google, I'm coming to you.
It's going to be the second in the reboot series. Or wait, maybe not. Contrary to popular belief, has been confirmed not to be a sequel of the 2009 reboot. So it might be a reboot of the reboot of the reboot.
Yeah, that's sort of what they're talking about with A Nightmare on Elm Street, is whether or not they're going to reboot it again, if they're going to try to do something new with it, if they're going to try to bring back Robert Englund, or what. It kind of gets tough, because these reboots happen, but they're not usually popular enough to get a follow-up. Halloween got Halloween 2, and I think that was because more it was a labor of love by Rob Zombie than by necessarily it being a huge hit.
But the first rebooted Halloween was good. I liked how it was a different take on the original with more backstory. The second Halloween was a fucking atrocity. It was so bad.
Well, the first Halloween, he had the skeleton to go off of from the original movie. The second Halloween, he did not follow the second movie, which wasn't necessarily a mistake.
No, but he went off on a weird path that everyone's going to compare it to the original, no matter how hard you try. So why try and reinvent the wheel when it's just going to get it's going to get treated worse when you stray so far from the path?
But I'm
for anybody who's listening that doesn't know, Stray from the Path is a hardcore band that apparently only Travis and I have ever heard of.
They're one of my favorite bands ever.
I know, you wear that shirt all the time in all of your selfies on the internet.
Oh god, I have to.
I'll get you some new shirts. You can do new selfies and new shirts.
God, I don't have a close.
All right, should we move on to Hellraiser?
I don't know. Well, maybe we should talk about the fact that Travis does not have clothing. We're going to start a GoFundMe. I'm just kidding.
Everybody who's watching the live feed on YouTube, unfortunately, Travis's camera is not working. Otherwise, you'd be getting the peak show.
Oh, God, you'd be able to see. I'm actually wearing a shirt that's got Brian and Stewie, and it says Wingman.
And you call me an old man. That's a very old man shirt to be wearing.
Oh, dude,
I'll be wearing a Bart Simpson shirt that says Cowabunga.
My mom used to buy me a lot of like Homer Simpson shirts, and I would never wear them, and I felt bad about it, but I didn't want to be like, that's like old fat guy stuff to wear.
Oh, I love these shirts. I think they're great. I love like anything that's like dad related or dad humor. I'm so about it.
But yeah, you're the vocalist of a metal band. I was the drummer. No one ever pays attention to the drummer. He's just a weird guy. So you can do it. I cannot.
Everyone's just like, oh, it's funny. It's ironic. Because you're a baby. I can't. Fuck off.
Speaking of how old Travis is, let's talk about another movie that was made before he was born.
Hellraiser. That's true. It was.
What year were you born?
92.
Oh, God.
God damn it.
I was 7 years old. Corey was probably 47. Yeah,
92, I was 21.
Holy shit, man.
Well, now we know Matt Spitz. So, Hellraiser came out in 1987, which is 3 years after Nightmare on Elm Street. So, like I was saying, it had some advantages because Nightmare on Elm Street had laid some groundwork at that point, that having a horror series built around something that was more existential than just a slasher with a knife or axe could be lucrative. Unfortunately, that didn't really prove to be the case with Hellraiser. The series never did financially all that great in the theaters, and then by number five, they just started releasing them direct to DVD.
Number five has another one of my favorite quotes. We watched this in high school on VHS, and at one point, there is a girl who is leading a guy into the basement, and he just goes, "Why are we going to the basement?" To this day, funniest thing ever. Don't know why. But I completely agree. It took me years to hear of Hellraiser. I actually watched the first Hellraiser. I don't remember how old I was, but it scared me so badly, I took the VHS and put it in the bottom of the garbage can.
I watched the first Hellraiser, I think, when I was 9 or 10, because my dad made his own pinhead mask, and he made a pinhead fucking suit.
Wow.
And oh yeah, fuck, he spent like six months making this thing.
You sure he didn't just strip it off the GIMP in the basement?
That's possible.
And it was he showed me that, and then I was like, "What the fuck are you?" Obviously, I was like, "Dad, what are you?" And he's just like, "I'm Pinhead." And I was like, "What's that?" And then he showed me the movie, and I was like, "Okay, I probably shouldn't have asked that."
Yeah, Pinhead's a highly underutilized slasher movie character, because he's kind of Pinhead isn't shit without like the other Cenobites, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And all the hooks with like nipples hanging off of them and stuff.
Well, whereas A Nightmare on Elm Street and Freddy is the murderer of the films, and with Hellraiser, at least in the first one, it's not really about Pinhead or the Cenobites coming to kill you. It's about the mythology of opening the box and the evil prompts them to come, and then they torture you for things that you've already done. In the first one, they even just say that they're witnesses to emotions and to pain and things, more than they are there to kill a bunch of teenagers. They're more like the leaders into hell than anything else. I saw the second Hellraiser before I saw the first one. I think it was a senior in high school, and somebody from my vocational class had me over and we watched it. And fortunately, like the first Evil Dead movie, it gets repeated, most of it, in the second one, so that you don't feel like you missed anything. Most of Hellraiser, you can catch up pretty quick in Hellraiser 2. And then get whatever additional story it needs.
I haven't seen two in a really long time, but I actually haven't seen a lot of them in a really long time, with the exception of having watched one and nine yesterday. But do they all kind of follow suit where someone magically comes back to life because of blood after being ripped apart?
Well, the first two focus on Kirstie, mm-hmm. who, like I said earlier, was played by Ashley Lawrence. That was her first film. And whereas the first one delves into her father and her stepmother. Her stepmother had an affair with the father's brother, Frank. So this movie starts out with Frank getting the box from some weird Asian dude out in the middle of wherever you're going to get raped.
Probably Helsinki.
And takes it back to his parents' house that he co-owns with his brother, opens it up, gets dragged into hell. But Frank, we find out, is a pretty shitty guy all around anyways. But he had an affair with his brother's wife, and that comes back when the brother and the wife move into the house, and she finds a bunch of Frank's stuff, including some BDSM photos and stuff that he had laying around.
Yeah, he was really into torture porn.
Right, and she starts remembering how Frank and her had the affair, and how he brought stuff out in her. She's very prim and proper in this, but she's got this ugly side that only seems to happen with him, and that's what Clive brings to this. Is it's a very different story. It's not a story of, it's not a slasher film. It's not a horror movie in the sense of like someone's chasing you in the dark. It's more of people are awful, and awful people will get awful results in the end.
So what would you suppose would happen if like a not horrible person got a hold of the box?
They do that in number two.
Oh, well, fuck you too then. Tell me what happens so I don't have to watch it.
Yeah, I've never seen two. I've seen the original one. and then that scared the shit out of me, and it made me not want to be a bad person.
Yeah, I mean, Clive, as a storyteller, really goes into the dark of humanity as much as he goes in the dark of like things that we should be afraid of as humans. But in the second movie, there's a young girl who finds the box or opens the box, and it's not dissimilar from Dream Warriors in the fact that it has the original girl, Kirsty, coming back and meeting up with this other girl who's in this hospital. She opens the box, and she can't speak or anything. She's kind of been locked up from that. And then the Cenobites show up, and they say, you know, it's not curiosity that summons us, it's evil. And so they go, and they try to find out who summoned them realistically, because they were using this young girl to do it.
So I guess that's kind of cool. Like, if I accidentally open up the puzzle box, I shouldn't die, because I don't think I'm a terrible person.
But what they do with Kirsty is, I mean, they definitely come after Kirsty in this, and she's not a bad person in it, but she does wind up doing things to keep herself safe. Like, she is trying to protect her father. Her father gets killed by her uncle and by her stepmother. So she, when she's being held captive by her stepmother, her uncle goes to stab her. Kirsty moves out of the way, and the stepmother gets killed. And then Kirsty goes and leads Frank to the Cenobites to kind of like keep them from taking her. She made a deal with them the very first time they show up and says, I'll bring you the guy that you lost.
Yep.
But then they still come after her anyways after that, and she has to fight her way out.
That's true. That's valid. They probably don't care a whole lot about your feelings.
Right.
Oh, God, no. Where would they? They're from hell.
Yeah, they just kill to kill, so I guess it doesn't really matter if you're a good or you're a bad person. If they see you, they're going to kill you.
It maybe expresses original sin, is that, you know, we're all sinners no matter what, and that you have to find salvation to be forgiven, and maybe it's just that she hadn't found salvation.
I guess that's one way to look at it, but I guess I just wanted to see something fucked up happen and a bunch of people die. That's why I watched it, not rethink my entire spirituality.
Let's talk about hell, man. That's the things you got to explore if you're trying to drag people into hell and seeing them get tormented, is why would you wind up in hell in the first place? How bad do you have to be?
Unfortunately, the whole thing kind of fell apart as the movies got further and further and closer to how we are now, and they're all just fucking bad.
They definitely got worse. I like the later one. I think it was Hellseeker, where they brought Kirsty back again. Mm-hmm. There's something about the final girl from the earlier films coming back, Dream Warriors with Nightmare on Elm Street, and then later on, New Nightmare. Although New Nightmare was different, it wasn't bringing back the character of Nancy, it was bringing back the actress as herself, having played Nancy. I think that Hellraiser did the same thing in the regards that it kept bringing Kirsty back once in a while to, because that was who people had connected with. Mm-hmm. Is that you have to have somebody that you connect with as the person who's struggling against the Cenobites, and then you want to see the Cenobites. And a couple of times they destroyed the other Cenobites, so it was just Pinhead, and that wasn't exactly what people wanted.
Yeah, but I don't know. Like, the other Cenobites are cool to look at, but they never really do anything for me.
Yeah, they have names like Chatterbox, mm-hmm. and I forget the fatter guy's one, but... Oh, Butterball. But then the woman is just called Female Cenobite.
Yep.
She gets no cool name at all, which is kind of bullshit.
Well,
you got to remember, this was the 80s. Misogyny was running wild.
But she's the only one of the other Cenobites who has speaking lines.
Yeah. Yeah, you'd think they would have given her a name. Huh, I never even thought about that. You just turned my entire world upside down face. I guess. I don't know. I mean, I think that wraps it up. I don't know if there's anything else you guys want to talk about these.
Well,
movies.
I just think if you look at the effects in these...
They're awesome in the 80s.
All the effects are external except for Freddy himself. They do a cool move where they have his arms extend through the alleyway.
It's terrifying.
Griffing things. But... And then they do a thing with the phone licking Nancy's face,
yes,
when she's answering it in her somewhat dreamscape. But the effects in Hellraiser, I think, are just way cooler. They do some creature design stuff. There's this one weird creature that's sort of upside down with its face down where its crotch would be.
Yep.
It's chasing Nancy the first time she opens the doorway to hell. And it comes back later. I think when you look at what Hellraiser brought to the table in the first movie, paints such a vivid lot of imagery that it really stands out. Whereas Nightmare on Elm Street, it was about being afraid of Freddy and then what he could do to the landscape to kind of trap you.
Yeah, and Hellraiser also had the hooks, you know, and they were very graphic when the hooks hooked into a person and pulled their skin and essentially their body apart, whereas Freddy was like, well, I'm just going to stab you in the stomach with my fingers.
It'd rip you apart and stuff. Oh, he did hang a guy. The other thing about Nightmare on Elm Street was that the ending was that like the inspiration for Home Alone or what? I mean, the whole thing is happening. I'm just like, Freddy could be Joe Pesci at this point. She reads this book on booby traps, which I don't think I ever caught that before in watching it.
Yeah,
and then she sets up booby traps around the house to capture Freddy when she brings him out of her dream. So she has a sledgehammer hit him. She does something where she puts gunpowder into a light bulb. And then he still winds up having dream powers in the real world anyways. How he burns her mother and then she goes sinking down to the mattress.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of do a piss-poor job of transcending the
although
dreamscape.
In the end, it turns out that whole thing where she brought him in the real world wasn't the real world. It was a dream within a dream.
Now we're in Inception.
Yes.
Which, maybe they should have done a better job explaining it at right away, but I don't know, whatever. It's an enjoyable movie. Freddy Krueger could turn into a giant dog turd and still kill people because he smells bad, and I would love him.
Yeah. I back that. And the thing with Hellraiser is the imagery was better because they were trying to paint a picture of what hell looks like.
That's true.
They were trying to show you, like, this is hell. This is what it's like. And then with Nightmare on Elm Street, it's just like, this is what your nightmares are. This is what, like, people are afraid of.
That's a valid point. I mean, Hellraiser wanted you scared of hell. Nightmare on Elm Street wanted you scared to go to sleep. Friday the 13th wants you to be scared of going in the woods.
I feel like Hellraiser is more don't open strange boxes and try to be a good person, which is, you know, terrifying enough, you know, just trying to do the right thing. But being afraid of falling asleep, there's just no out to that. You know, there's no way around it. So you're stuck. At some point or another, you're going to black out and fall asleep.
Not if you drink enough coffee. Or, what was it, Hypnosil?
Yeah. Well, she says in there that she had been awake for 7 days and that the record at that point in time was 11.
I call bullshit. Let's see here. Record days awake. I'm going to ruin that movie right now. Record holder. Oh, wow. 18 days, 21 hours, and 40 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, it starts to seriously affect your health. It's not just a mental health state, but eventually you start to break down if you don't get actual REM sleep.
Somebody was awake for 18 fucking A.
Right, yeah, right. He's from England. What do you expect?
That's true.
Yeah. I don't know why you'd want to do that, but yeah, I've only ever stayed awake for like 24 to 30 hours. And you start to get loopy doing that. I could not imagine 266 and a half hours being awake.
Yeah, no, that seems crazy to me, but then I'm not a very good sleeper.
If you're on a meth bender, that's a little different.
That's true. That's another type of crank.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a crank talk for another day. I don't know. I'm gonna give 5 out of 5 dead hookers to both of these. They're classics. They're from my childhood. I to this day love these movies.
Oh, 5 out of 5, 100%.
Yeah,
absolutely. You can't beat these two films. On their own or together, it's a double feature. It's just a magical evening of I'm gonna piss myself in bed tonight.
Well, and I mean, when we talked about doing these movies side by side, I had an inner conundrum of where to draw the line. I mean, because we could have added Friday the 13th, we could have added, you know, Halloween, you could have added Candyman. It's just the 80s were chock full of badass slasher movies.
Yeah, Candyman would definitely work against these. Halloween and Friday the 13th, I think, would be better as a one-off against each other.
That's true. I guess I know what we're going to be doing sometime in the near future. amongst watching all these other fucking movies I want to watch with you, you son of a bitch.
Jamie Lee Curtis is just the best person ever, so we'll leave it at that with Halloween.
True Lies. I like her in True Lies.
Trading Places.
So you're weird. We're not.
Okay.
We're not. Travis, I suggest you cancel your tour dates with Cattle Decapitation and do more of these shows with us.
Dude, I can do these on the road. I don't give a fuck.
That's true. Maybe we'll have to. We'll see. We'll see. We'll be living the rock star dream with one of our, well, my favorite, one of my favorite bands. I know they're one of yours too, so you have fun out there. But thank you very much for your time.
Oh, no, thank you.
I know you're currently
like
doing nothing.
I like hearing
today. You like living in the Matrix too, because you've been doing a lot of robot and voice today.
Yes. Pew, pew, pew.
I'll be sure to add the Skrillex beat dropping sounds right there if I can find them.
And take off your headphones in 3, 2, 1.
I'm not going to make a note. I'm too lazy.
yeah, dude, fuck that.
Right. Well, Travis, thank you again. Corey, thank you. And until next time, thanks for listening to the podcast of Terror.
Stay scary.
Mwah.
Been listening to a production of Galactic Netcasts. For more about the show you just listened to, including how to subscribe and give us feedback, plus additional podcasts from the Galactic Network, daily news features, videos, links to our social networks, and more, go to gncasts.com. That's gncasts.com.